You're listening to Civic Media. You can tune into any of our live shows on any radio station across the state with the Civic Media app. Find us in your phone's app store and listen anytime, anywhere.
Broadcasting live from the Civic Media Studios in Green Bay, this is Nightlight with Pete Chwaba, your inside source on everything entertainment from Wisconsin to Hollywood. And now, a guy who likes to talk trash, but only when he's at the dump, Pete Chwaba.
Hey, welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, as we kick off Act 2 here tonight at Nightlight. Great to have you with me. Fun show tonight. We have a great question. If you want to get in on the conversation, folks, it is National Start Over Day. So what is something in your life you wish you could redo? National Start Over Day. What do you wish you could redo? I said I would probably not stop doing stand-up comedy. I just kind of segued into writing and got lucky enough and sold some stuff and just kind of stopped doing it. I never made a conscious effort to quit. And I wish I would have put a little more money away. My kids are smarter about that than me. Did you know this, Conrad? You're a young buck. You put some money away at your age, and before you know it, you're worth $2 billion.
Really?
Yeah. It just takes a few years.
How much? Like a dollar?
You got to put at least $100 away. $100 in your pocket. Yeah. Yeah, so I would do that. Conrad said he would not play a game of pickup basketball that set him back physically a while because he had a very bad ankle sprain, which these are the kind of things you regret when you're 25, right? So I hope that's the biggest regret you have in your life, Conrad. But we've got some great answers. We'll read your texts in just a bit. We also talked and got the popcorn pick of the week during the first hour with my current guest, Wayne Thomas York. We will be back with Wayne in just a second. He picked Harold Maud as his popcorn pick of the week. And we made some fun of, was it Kenny G? I seem to black out every time I hear Kenny G, and then I don't know what happens. So what's the deal with Kenny G? Oh.
Pete?
Oh.
Pete?
Oh, yeah. Hey. You know, that bit only works if people are listening and not watching on the stream. They still see me sitting here laughing and giggling.
What?
My
that means
stupid,
you got to play to the part now.
Gag.
Every time we do it, you got to
whack my head on the desk. Exactly. So that's our question of the night. That's our popcorn pick. Bob Dennis, folks, will be here in studio at 7:20. We're going to talk about the connection between U.S. presidents and the mafia. And there's more of a connection there than you would think, even maybe with some presidents you don't anticipate. But we'll do that at 7:20 with Bob. Right now, we have a few more minutes with my pal, actor Wayne York. He is here on the stream. He made the popcorn pick of the week, like I said. And he has a really cool, is this a Facebook thing, Wayne? A site? Or I know you've done video for it. Tell us a little bit about what Hooray for Hollywood is and how people can find it.
Oh, you bet. You bet. And just so you know, I found that movie title that made me cry way back in 1993, The Piano.
Oh.
I think you might have said that. The Piano, 1993?
No, I said The Pianist, I think. But The Piano, yeah, that was... Piano was like an Oscar-nominated film. I can't believe I couldn't think of that.
No, okay. Me too. Holly Hunter,
yeah, right. All right, yeah. Well, thank you for doing your research during your downtime.
Of course.
During intermission, yeah.
Of course.
So, yeah, so tell us all about Hooray for Hollywood.
Well, I started on TikTok. First, because work was slow in both the acting world and the location world, my friends were saying, Wayne, you have to be creative. You have to do something. And I thought, well, if we're going to be leaving Los Angeles in maybe 3-4 years or something like that, I thought maybe I should focus in on LA and study it more and kind of share some of the love that I have for it and have always had. On TikTok. So I started a TikTok account and Instagram account. And then just not long ago, I thought, well, maybe I could put it on Facebook. So I started Facebook and I put it on YouTube. They're all the same.
Wow.
But I try and do a segment every 2 weeks celebrating Hollywood.
Very nice. So obviously I can see why you did this, but how do you pick your stories? Like, how do you... find something that's worth spending that much time with.
I think I go I either go down my list or when I'm driving around, I go, I love that building. I want to learn more about that. Or I think that's where, you know, somebody was discovered or something like that. So I'm going to go home and see if I can find out more about that. And then I do. And then I start the pictures and then I start the research.
Nice.
And it usually takes about 2 to 3 days to put one together. Longer than I thought. And then I see, and then I'll get, you know, some nice views and everything. People are fantastic.
Yeah.
But then I'll see somebody who has taken up one photograph of one hotel get thousands of hits. It's like, wait a minute. I wrote a script. I went and filmed something. Watch mine.
I like made a little movie here, people. That's hilarious. I can't figure that stuff out either, though. But I love that. I love that you do that, and I've really enjoyed some of your posts. So please keep it up. I think it's a lot of fun. And
thank
I
you.
Love those little nuggets of, like, last night we had a fellow host here from Civic Media on. He does a show here every day from 2 to 4. Todd Alba, the Todd Alba Show. It's more political. So when he comes on my show, he really gets into it and has fun. And he went to a spot in Madison, Wisconsin, last night where Elvis got out of a limo and broke up a fight with two bullies picking on a younger kid. It was older, heavier set Elvis, but nonetheless, there's a plaque there and everything commemorating. So now that's Madison,
great.
Wisconsin. In LA, you've got that kind of stuff everywhere. I mean, you're never going to run out of material there, Wayne.
No, I don't think so. I think it's kind of everywhere. And I love it. I just,
yeah.
You know, I say to my wife, Bibi, look, I don't think we could leave in 3 years. I think we might need 4 or 5 because I've got work to do.
There's a lot to explore still. Wayne, yeah. Do you mind if I take a quick call? And then I'd like to ask you the question of the night, if you don't mind. All right, Conrad, who do we have?
Ollie from the North Woods.
Ollie from the North Woods. Hello, Ollie. How are you tonight?
I'm fine. This will be a little less than Dwayne.
Okay. He's
after
listening.
After what he just said, I wouldn't have spent so much time working, making sure that my family was secure and that they had a house, a roof over their head when I passed away, because all the time that I spent working, I missed out on special memories and time with my grandchildren. And I would do that, definitely do that over and change that.
Well, that's it. Wow, that's a great call, Ollie. Thank you.
Great.
Thank you for telling that to Wayne. Yeah, you got to find a balance, right, Wayne? You got to take care of people.
Right.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you so much, Ollie, as always. Have a great night.
No. Thank you.
Okay.
Very helpful.
Do you have something, Wayne, that you wish you hadn't stopped doing or did more of, a redo, so to speak?
Oh, boy. I heard when you said that, and I thought, what would it be?
Well, hopefully you don't have anything.
Yeah. Well, I let the kids grow up. So instead of keeping them where I could carry them on my shoulders and snuggle and cuddle and all that, they grew up. And, you know, now 23 and 20, it's like, hey, listen, I want to tell you a story. Sorry, Dad. I just have to make a call.
Yeah, right. They're as they say on the show Modern Family that did a great episode, they're cats in the cradling you. So that's... Wayne, you've had you've had some great credits over your career, and you've got so many of them. I have to ask you though, I loved the show The X-Files for a while, and then I thought it sort of kind of meandered and it lost its way, in my opinion. But when it first came out, I loved it. You did an episode of The X-Files. What was that like, and what did you play?
I did, if I remember correctly. They were giving a nod to The Simpsons. It was like on a Sunday night, I think. So every episode that they were going to air that night from whatever different shows, they had to somehow give a nod to The Simpsons. So I think, if I'm not mistaken, I was like a technical guy in a booth, and my name was Homer. And I said, really? My name's Homer? And they went, yeah, it's a nod to The Simpsons. But it was a really good experience.
Yeah.
I thoroughly enjoyed it.
Go ahead. Sorry, Wayne.
No. I was just going to say, I have to say that when I was blessed and got cast on The Black Stallion, the TV show, Mickey Rooney was in it.
Oh, my
and
gosh.
And when he found out that I liked old Hollywood, he would not let me go. So when it would be like, Wayne, we need you set, for such and such. He'd be like, well, wait. And he would take my arm and kind of go, yeah. So then she said this. And I said, yeah, oh, I love it. I love it. But I got to go. They're calling me to set. He was fabulous.
What a great loved memory it. That is. That is fantastic. Oh. On
may,
the stream,
may I share another one with you?
Oh, absolutely. Oh. Please. No. Go ahead.
I was in Diagnosis Murder with Dick Van Dyke. Dick Van Dyke is a huge Laurel and Hardy fan. I'm a Laurel and Hardy fan, and I just happen to have this on my computer. So this is Dick Van Dyke and I playing Laurel and Hardy.
What? Oh, my gosh. Yeah.
Heaven.
What a great Heaven. Picture. When was that, Wayne? Like, what year was that?
1996.
That's a fine year. And Dick Van Dyke was a young buck then. He's like 100 now. So you probably thought you were pushing it then. Like, I better get this picture. He's getting up there. Nope. He's still going. It's pretty amazing.
I know.
That's so great.
In fact, I sent him this picture a couple years ago.
What a great, that's fantastic.
Anyway, I just had to share those.
I appreciate that. That's hooray for Hollywood and hooray for Wayne. That's outstanding. On the stream, Jim says, Harold Maud was an excellent choice. Fun picture show. I could not agree more, Jim. So, Wayne, you were on all these shows. We just have about a minute or two left. What was your best experience? You were on, like, Drake and Josh. You were on the show called Winging It. You know, Conrad's 25. What Disney show did you do? I know you had kind of a run where you did some of the kids shows or played a teacher or something like that.
Yeah, I played a teacher in Winging It, but that was shot up in Toronto.
Okay.
And I'm not sure if it aired down here, but I think my most fun kids show was Hannah Montana and working with
Miley Cyrus.
Thank you so
How
much.
Wow, she turned into a huge, like, that's really impressive. I mean, because some of those Disney kids, they have a good run, and you hope they put the money away, but she's like, she's went above and beyond. She's amazing.
And she doesn't call me anymore. No lunches, nothing.
Oh, God. Don't put up with that, Wayne. You want me? I'll make a few phone calls. Conrad, take a memo. Let's get on that, and
Sounds
let's see
good.
What we can
yeah,
do.
Yeah, yeah.
All right.
I'll get her phone number and give her a call.
Wayne, this was so much
Thank
fun.
You, Conrad.
Thank you, buddy. I appreciate your time tonight. Say hi to the family, and let's actually do a catch-up one of these days. It would be great to talk to you.
Off
the
air. I would love that.
All right.
Thank
you,
very
buddy.
Thank you much, Pete. It was just a pleasure.
Likewise. Keep up the great work. All right. That's Wayne York.
Thank you,
check
friend.
Out Hooray for Hollywood on TikTok and YouTube and Facebook. Wayne's a great follow and a great guy. So there you go. Conrad, we've got that was a great call from Ali. I like that a lot.
Yeah, yeah.
PJ says, he's watching on the stream, he says, I'd go back and redo the 90s. I need to make a few changes.
Yeah,
but
me
then
too.
But he doesn't elaborate.
Me too.
You weren't even born. Get out of here.
I was born in the 90s.
Were you really? 99?
Six months.
You had six That's, months of the 90s. Yeah. So your redo would be you'd live more of the 90s. I thought the 90s were good. Dave on the stream says, I learned how to golf when I was 3. This is going back to our conversation earlier. He says, my grandpa was the club champion at Little River Country Club.
Awesome.
Very nice, Dave. He says, I wish I would have focused on golf. I think a lot of people realize that and they get their kids into golf earlier, right? Because it is one of those games you could. Dave, was your grandpa Judge Smales?
Who
you
is
know
that?
What I'm talking? Oh, Caddyshack? Come on.
Oh,
we
got to
get Bob Dennis in here. I make a Caddyshack joke. All right.
Yeah, well.
Todd from DePere is having a laugh at Wayne. He says, that. That was a quote, as if that will make it okay. Funniest part of the story. Thank you, Todd from DePere. We'll read the rest of your text when we come back. Bob Dennis coming up next for some mob talk. It's Peach Wabba and Nightlight on the Civic Media Radio Network.
I feel like we're forever every time we get together, but whatever, let's get lost on Mars. You want me, I want you, baby. My sugar boo, I'm levitating. The Milky Way, we're renegading.
You're listening to Civic Media. Stay up to date on the latest news and information for your local community and Wisconsin by signing up for our free email newsletter. Visit civicmedia.us/email to get started.
Nice pull, K-Man. There's a new recording coming out from Sly and the Family Stone, recording a live concert from 1967 that was recently discovered. And they'll be releasing it, which is kind of cool. This is Peach Wabba and Nightlight. Welcome back, folks. There's a little showbiz nugget for you as we before we get into our next segment here. Our question of the night, you still got time, is what would you redo about your life? It's National Start Over Day. What would you redo? Have some fun with it. And we haven't heard from Steady Eddie yet, have we, Conrad?
No, it's not an early text from Steady tonight. It's going to be a late one, I think.
No pressure, Steadfast Edward. Sydney from Oregon says, I've been too forgiving. I should have been more intentional about seeking revenge on my enemies. Do it, Sydney. Go get them. And please give us a full report. All right, folks, I'm excited. This is a big night because Bob Dennis is back in the studio. We always have fun when Bob is here. We talk typically, I would say, about mob stuff, but a little, some urban stuff, some mob stuff. We've had some great talks, and Bob is always fun to have here. And I love that you come into the studio, too. I appreciate that. I know you just said you live like 3 miles away, but that's still an effort to get
off
the couch.
Depends on where we parked the van.
Yeah, okay, fair enough. Where did you park? Did you find street parking?
Well, right out here. You know, it was amazing.
Oh, I
actually parallel parked.
Really?
Yeah. A lot of people can't do that.
No, a lot of people.
I can't do a lot, but I can parallel park.
Yeah. I used to be great at it. I had a job when I was in college in Chicago where I had to parallel park like an 18-foot van. And I could do it. I got really good at it. And then I tried to do it right here outside the studio. It took me like 5 minutes. People were watching like, he's not going to do this. Like, and I've got a little Honda. Like, it's not even, it was embarrassing. Do you have a regret, Bob, or something you'd like to redo? You've had a good life. I can't imagine you have too many.
I have no regrets.
None?
None.
Wow.
I don't believe you, but okay. Well, if I didn't do things the way I did, I wouldn't be who I am today.
You wouldn't be sitting here right now.
With Pete Schwabba.
One minor derivation or deviancy on your path.
A lot of deviance in my background, but go ahead.
Well, maybe you should have started with the redo with there. But no, like, it's amazing. Like, I always say I wouldn't do anything differently about my life that didn't result in my kids.
Mm-hmm.
And the rest I can live with. I'm fine with it. But
I really don't have... my parents were Depression era children and World War II, greatest generation.
Yeah.
And they had a philosophy of, we don't look back. We're not going to worry about tomorrow. We're going to do today, right now. And that's kind of where
I'm
good
way to be.
Yeah.
Very zen.
Well, they would have not really gone with that because the whole World War II thing was going on. But I like living in the moment. I like living today. You know, if I screw up or don't do something wrong, we'll do it better next time. You know?
Yeah, that's a great philosophy. All right. Bob, you have, I don't even know where to start. You sent me a list of presidents because I wanted to talk to you initially about urban legends. Because every time I have you on, I'm like, all right, let's talk some urban legends. And we get sidetracked with mob stuff because I love mob stuff too. So I did think it was interesting, the real estate listing you sent me with Capone's home for sale.
Mm-hmm.
Tell us about that.
It was a home that, well, they think he lived there. But it had secret exits out to the lake, out to the barn.
Was this in Milwaukee?
Yeah, it was outside of Milwaukee, yeah.
I have never heard of him living or having a place. I knew about up north and down like Kettle Moraine or somewhere out in Waukesha, but I never heard that before, that he was in Milwaukee.
He had many, many, many houses because he never stayed in the same place two nights in a row.
Yeah.
Because he was afraid of being assassinated.
It's like Conrad.
Is he going to put his clothes back on?
God, it got really quiet in here all of a sudden.
It's kind of weird.
It was the nudity?
I don't want to look that way. I'm just, you know. That's what I wish I could change. Okay.
He doesn't change clothes. He just changes houses. All right. So, but why? Yeah, that's interesting, though. He would go right to another big city and hide in plain sight, maybe?
Yep. This actually kind of ties it in a way. Franklin Delano Roosevelt was elected in 1932. And Al Capone, his career was coming to an end because of tax evasion in 1932.
Right.
On December the 8th of 1941, the day after the Japanese bombed Pearl Harbor, they went and got Al Capone's 1928 Cadillac, a black Cadillac, to use to transport President Franklin Roosevelt to the Congress so he could make that famous speech where he says, we have nothing to fear but fear itself.
Right.
Because it was bulletproof. And they didn't have a bulletproof vehicle to put the president in.
Oh, my gosh.
So that was like the first official limousine for a president.
That's like Al Capone doing a solid for FDR.
Yeah, and they say that, and they don't know if it's true or not, but they say, you know, I hope Al approves of this or something, you know. It's like, well, okay, I think he's sitting in jail.
Wait, was Al Capone still alive then?
Sure, he died in 1948 or 49, oh, okay. I believe.
Yes. Oh, that's so great.
Yeah.
So you sent this. It was the historic lakefront mansion called Capone Home with secret rooms listed for $4.49 million. Now, it is right on the lake. It's going to cost a pretty penny in a beautiful area of Milwaukee, but $4.5 million, are people, is that the kind of thing people would buy just so they can say they have a Capone house and, or they're enamored with secret rooms or something?
I think if you're going to pay $4.49 million, you probably have a couple extra bucks in your wallet.
Probably.
Okay, so you're probably going to go with it. It's a beautiful house. I mean, it is. It's a gorgeous house.
I watched the video earlier. It's. I'm not going to make a move on it personally because I broadcast out of Green Bay every night, but you know, it looks like
we just
like
finished our
nice mortgage.
We just paid off our mortgage.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And years ago, you used to have mortgage burning events where you'd go someplace and you would take your mortgage that was paid off and you'd like go to my father-in-law went to a restaurant and he held up the mortgage and they got them a stainless steel bowl and told everybody, we're going to burn the mortgage. And everybody was like, yay. And they burned it. But nowadays, really? I said that in the bank. My wife and I did. We said that in the bank and they're like, what?
It's just like aberrant behavior. Like,
okay, well, we're old people and
we like to burn things.
Pyromaniacs.
All right, Bob Dennis is here, folks. Bob, tell people about your podcast. Where can they hear it?
Well, it's on the Swellcast Network. And for Urban Legends and Stranger Truths, if you just type that into your Google or URL, it'll pop right up.
Fantastic. All right, we're going to come back. We're going to talk about, let's start with Truman. You say he was the most mobbed up president. We'll do that after the news. We're coming right back. Bob Dennis is here. It's Peach Wabba and Nightlight on the Civic Media Radio Network. At that time, I was talking through one of my own snores. That's a talent I have. Welcome back to Nightlight. That was the musical stylings of Kenny G. This is Peach Wabba and Nightlight. Great to have you with me on this Thursday. PJ on the stream says, of course, presidents were associated with the mob, but they refused to say what they did with Jimmy Hoffa to this day. Boy, I mean, some of the mysteries, Bob Dennis is my guest. Check out his podcast. You Google Bob Dennis and then go to Urban Legends. And
you could just go directly to Urban Legends.
Okay.
Skip the whole Bob Dennis part. That part's not important.
It's important that you're here, though, so thank you. I would love to know who killed Kennedy and who. What the heck happened to Jimmy Hoffa. I have an idea what happened to Jimmy Hoffa. Mm-hmm. He's part of a freeway or for a while with an end zone or something like that, but basically, then they know he was abducted from that. Was it like the Red Lion restaurant or something outside Detroit? Yep. Mm-hmm. So they killed him. I know that. Mm-hmm. But Kennedy, like all of that, like you just said during the break, Robert Kennedy, the anniversary of his death is tomorrow.
57 years ago.
Yep. 57 years ago. What do you think? It just seems so convoluted. Like we were just talking about this 2 days ago and they said, Oswald was killed by Jack Ruby. I'm like, when does that ever happen? Of course that was a cover up. Mm-hmm. I'm not a conspiracy guy, Bob, but I mean, and then somebody killed Ruby. Like, is that there's just do-gooder citizens that want to make things right. No, something's going on there. What do you think happened to Kennedy before we get into all this? Speaking of, we can start with Kennedy and the mob too, though, too. Because I know.
Want. Well, yeah. And their affiliation goes back, you know, many, many years. There are people that say that the old man, Joe Kennedy, was involved with the mob and the mafia where he was doing booze. But he actually, you know, there's no real evidence of that. However, he did do something where he cornered the market on Scotch whiskey and through his company called Somerset Importers. And he made 50 cents on every bottle of booze that came to the United States. In 1934, it was $900,000. In today's dollars, it would be $21,518,523.
Oh, my God. I'd love to corner the market on something. I've never even come close to doing that.
Yeah, I'm not even,
So let's say, all right, so he obviously, you say there's no direct link. And maybe there's not. I don't know. I mean, but if you're bootlegging or if you're in that industry in that time, you're dealing with the mob, right?
Sure, sure.
I'm not saying he was killing people, but you know, you're making deals to move the product or whatever that kind of, and everybody used to say this, you know, living in Chicago, it's like, well, Daley dealt with the mob. Well, the Chicago mob in the very early, and we've talked about this, they owned, they had a piece of everything. You had to talk to them. You had to negotiate. Was it the same thing with Kennedy?
Well, sure. I mean, you know, through the whole era, and they all had to move things somehow. And they all knew each other. But the thing is, and you got to give credit to Joe Kennedy, who was a horrible human being. He really was. He never got caught.
Yeah.
You know, that's the ultimate of smart. I mean, there.
Right.
But yeah, it's true in New York today as well as Chicago. I mean, there's a piece of it that goes to the mafia, no matter what.
Still?
To this day. Okay. Trump actually had an interview a while back that I saw. And he talked about, yes, I dealt with him because he said that, you know, it's New York.
Construction.
And they say, well, how would you do it? And he said, well, I would take and I would make a contract and I would have that contract overrun by about, you know, 20%. And that was the skim you gave to the mob.
Wow.
I mean, he just flat out admitted it.
Yeah.
Like, wow. Okay. That's interesting.
So let's get back to Kennedy, though, in terms of him. Like, I think it'll come out like you have so much, you know, you've got all these presidents going back to Eisenhower. Or FDR, I should say, that had to deal with the mob in some capacity or another. But who do you think was the mob? They were powerful. But do you think taking out Kennedy, was that like one or two people from every organization, CIA, mob, FBI, whatever it was? It couldn't have been too wide, right?
Mm-hmm.
Or somebody would have talked.
If you, there's a podcast by Rob Reiner. And he talks about this, and he talks about the Kennedy assassination and how his theory, and he backs it up with whatever information he has, talks about how it's a combination of the military, the CIA, the FBI, and the mob, and that all of it is coordinated with not top level, but like second and third level people.
Okay.
And that they all were given an assignment to do something, but they didn't all know that each other was doing the same thing at the same time.
Oh, wow.
And that they all came together because
plausible deniability.
Yes, or, absolutely.
Oh, wow.
Absolutely. So nobody, you know, supposedly knew which one actually did the job.
So I have a lot of lawyers in my family and they're always talking about evidence. And my dad is really thorough when he's like, look, the Warren Commission put out this report and I hear what he's saying, but the report also could have said they don't have any evidence that it's anybody else. Mm-hmm. So they settle on single gunmen. I mean, what's your take on that?
I'm sorry, but the Warren Commission is a fantasy. It's a fiction. As a matter of fact, the gentleman who just recently died, he was the last Secret Service member. He talked about how he was the one who dropped the bullet on the gurney in Kennedy's gurney when he was wheeled into the hospital because he had found that bullet and didn't know what to do with it, put it in his pocket when they had taken his body into the hospital, was in the hospital at the time, and thought, geez, I better get rid of this thing, and then drop it on the gurney. So,
what would that do exactly?
Just rid of it for him.
Get rid of it for him, but the bullet is next to Kennedy's body then?
Yeah, so somebody else would find it.
Okay.
So that bullet, that supposedly the magic bullet that killed everybody, was just a fallacy. I met John Connally, who was in the car with, I met him when I was a news reporter.
He got messed up too. He got shot two or three times, right?
He got the bullet hit him in the wrist
in
the hip, and I think there was something else. But he was running for president in 1980, and I was a news reporter, and he was talking in his John Connally voice. And I had asked him about how he had spent all this money and how he only had one delegate to the convention, and all of his rich friends are going to be disappointed, and didn't know, did that bother him? And he looked at me with these brown eyes of death, and I thought, oh, boy, I've done it now. And then he stopped and said, well, I was born in a little log house with no water. You know, and I was like, okay. And as we left, he walked over, and he was a big man. He was a tall man. And I'm short. You know, I'm like 5'6". So he's like a foot taller than I am, and he comes over to me, and he says, you want to see it, don't you, boy?
Oh, wow.
I'm like, okay, this is kind of creepy, but... sure. Okay. I mean, there's a lot of people around. This is okay. It's safe. And so he rolls up his sleeve and he shows me the scar from where the bullet hit his arm and shattered his wrist.
Oh man.
So there was like a piece of history right there. It was like, oh my God, you know, it was just amazing. Absolutely amazing.
Wow.
Yeah.
So, all right. So if you had to give a theory about who killed Kennedy, who would you say is behind it? Just based on what you know?
I don't like conspiracies. I'm not big on them. But at the same time, I say to myself, it's pretty tough to knock off a guy so thoroughly and completely. You know, that, and they talk about the movement, how his body lurches forward. And then there's people that say, well, he had on his support because he had a bad back.
Right.
So that when it shot him, it pushed him back and then brought him forward. But then the doctors, if you see the 12 doctors who were involved in the emergency room that were all involved, they all said that it was a frontal wound. And they all signed off on it. There's actually a documentary that was released about that after the last of the doctors died. And each of them in this documentary says, yes, it was a frontal wound.
Really?
Yeah. So I'm thinking, okay, they were there. They know.
Yeah. So he grabbed his throat.
Right.
And then you're saying there was a wound in addition to that from the front?
Well, no. The first shot, they think, was at his throat.
Okay.
Because it went in right by his esophagus. And then the second one was the one that came and took out the greater portion of the back of his head.
Okay. So they're just two. Okay. I gotcha. So the first one was, okay. Wow. All right. So you're not really, you're not giving us an actual suspect here, Bob, and I don't expect you to like make a citizen's arrest.
I think that the Rob Reiner thing is a pretty good supposition. I think that there were, you know, multiple people involved. I couldn't say who they were, but.
Right.
And Jack Ruby actually died in prison.
Oh, that's right.
From cancer.
You're right. Yeah.
So.
Yeah. A heck of a guy. All right, so let's talk about Truman. You say Truman. My guest, by the way, is Bob Dennis. He is I call you a mob authority. Are you comfortable with that title?
I'm good with that, yeah.
And you do a mean John Connolly. I've never met the man. I can only imagine that spot on, though. Yeah, I could even do that impression out. So you have Truman, you say, was the most mobbed up of any president.
Yes, and yet the least affected by it. Isn't that amazing?
How do you explain that?
Well, all right. It started out in 1924. The guy named Tom Pendergast and the Pendergast Syndicate, which was in Kansas City, came to Truman and said, we want you to run for judge. And they got him elected judge in 1924. And then they helped him to get elected to the Senate in 1923. They supported him with votes and with money. And they continued to just promote his career until Pendergast actually ended up going to prison for tax evasion. But he continued from prison to manipulate money to be supporting Truman and to help him get elected and then reelected in 1940. They gave him what was called a Stafford automobile, which was at the time considered to be like a second-level Cadillac. It was pretty amazing. He also had a very close relationship with Johnny Azia, who was the Cosa Nostra family in
Kansas
Missouri.
City?
Yeah, Kansas City and in the area, like big time. Let's see. He once let one of the members of the mafia steal $10,000 from the general revenue fund of the government so that the rest of the mafia wouldn't take $1.5 million.
Wow.
Isn't that weird? I mean, it was a guy like, yeah, I'm going to take this. And okay. he himself said he never took anything personally, that he didn't have more than 150 bucks in his wallet, which I tend to believe because he lived with his mother-in-law his entire life in a house that she owned.
Wow.
So anyways, let's see what else.
But when you say mobbed up, like he wasn't doing anything illegal necessarily.
He himself was not, but all the way through his entire career.
He had those contacts.
They guided him. And he was one of the presidents who, and all of them do this. They kind of just say, yeah, we can't really prove anything. And they look the other way.
Right.
Because there is so much control and so much power. It's like a secondary government in a lot of ways that... they just let it go. It's like, I can't really handle it.
Wow.
He also pardoned members of the syndicate and the machine. He paroled Midwest Mafia members who were convicted of extortion, the unions and the show business unions. He opened an alliance to the, quote, hardened criminals with gambling of every kind of vice and imaginable. Let's see. But he got by because he was compassionate and he was honest. And I had it written down here somewhere. There is a phrase, which I can't find right now, but it talks about how somebody who, if they're a politician, even if they do some kind of cruddy things, if they're really honest about it, how people just kind of go, yeah, okay, it's politics.
Appreciate his honesty.
Yeah, it's like, whatever. You know, at least he's being honest.
Shallow graves in his backyard, but he admits it.
You know, it's okay. You know, just don't dig in the backyard.
Jeez. And I always liked Truman because, like, you said supposedly. Here's the two stories I remember about Truman: that he played, they were playing cards with Churchill on the train, and Churchill got up, went to the bathroom or something, and Truman said, "This guy just saved the free world. Nobody beats him at poker," or something to that effect. Like, let Churchill win.
Yeah.
And then apparently, he and Bess used to really go at it because they always were changing mattresses. Mm-hmm.
I'm not saying anything. I'm just
letting I'm not asking for an eyewitness here, Bob. I'm just,
well, you know, there was a thing with the
Truman's
microphone
never invited you
bed.
Over with the.
Well, you know.
Okay. So also, let's do Eisenhower, because this is Eisenhower fascinates me for the reasons you said during the break, because he's kind of considered like he didn't do anything.
Mm-hmm.
But that's not really the case.
Everybody considered him to be a do-nothing president.
Yeah.
And it couldn't be further from the truth. Eisenhower didn't want to ruin his image. He loved being known as the grandfatherly person, and yet he had his hands on the control of everything in Washington, D.C., and instructed people on what they needed to do. From the time that he was elected in 1953 until he ended his time in 1961, he had committees and commissions that were studying things, examining things, and going after people. 1957, they actually had, well, first they had SS Kiffhofer back in the early 1950s.
Let's pick up right there, Bob. We'll come back. We're talking about Eisenhower and his connections and how much he actually did, contrary to his image. This is Pete Schwab at Nightlight. We'll have a few more minutes with Bob Dennis coming up next on the Civic Media Radio Network.
You're listening to Civic Media. Find the latest news, information, and archives of all your favorite shows on the Civic Media website, civicmedia.us.
Welcome back, folks. This is Pete Schwabba, and you've got Nightlight for a few more minutes here on a Thursday. Bob Dennis is here. Our question tonight was, what is something in your life you wish you could redo? It's National Start Over Day, and we've got a couple texts here to finish off here. Steady Eddie says, Pete, to paraphrase, old blue eyes, that's Frank Sinatra for your listeners, younger than 85. Regrets, I've had a few, but here is one that we'll mention. In high school, there was this girl who I was in love with.
Uh-oh.
But I know, I hope he keeps this PG. In love with, but I was just too afraid and shy. I let my chance go by, the chance that she might have loved me too. I saw Kenny Bruce Gorlick, Kenny G, in person. That might be his real name. Con, can you Google?
I will, yes.
Kenny G in person 30 plus years ago, my girlfriend's idea, of course. And about 10 years ago, I shook the hand of Aaron Rodgers. I don't understand the correlation there. He says, regrets, I've had a few, but through it all, I stood tall and I did it my way. Is he saying he regrets shaking Aaron Rodgers' hand and seeing Kenny G? Is he equating the two?
I think so.
Steady Eddie.
It is Kenneth Bruce Gorlick.
Okay. Well done, Steady Eddie. I still have questions, though. 608 says, this is Rachel from Milwaukee. I wish I would have continued to learn cursive after they stopped teaching it in school. I have so many cards from family members and have no idea what they're saying. That's great, Rachel. Thank you very much. Tomorrow night, folks, on the show, we've got a great show. Mike Clemens will be here, Civic Media Sports Authority, at 6:35. My pal Mark Unger, an actor, will be here to talk about the last shot of The Sopranos. He went on a rant on Facebook, and I can't wait to talk to him about it. And then filling in for Terry Barr on Barr Band Friday Night will be Rocker. That's all tomorrow night. We've got a few more minutes here with our pal, Bob Dennis. We're talking about presidents and their connections to the mafia. So Eisenhower, we were on. Should we move on? Sure, if you want.
Yeah,
so he did a lot. Was Eisenhower like, I feel like Clinton was president at a great time, the dot-com boom. Mm-hmm. Was that kind of how it was for Eisenhower? Like they were building all these interstates and GI housing and all that kind of stuff?
Well, okay, they built the interstates because Eisenhower wanted to have a way to move military rockets throughout the United States. He had a mandatory height of 13 feet 9 inches on a bridge, so that the trucks could go through with the truck-mounted rockets.
Like with a rocket. Wow, yeah, no kidding.
And he realized that by having the interstate system that he'd be able to move troops quickly, which was then, only like maybe 60 years later, realized and adopted by China, which is, if you go to China or if you look at it, their interstate system is almost exactly identical to America's. It's built exactly the same way.
Wow.
I hope they get stuck in roundabouts. I'm sorry.
I almost got hit today by roundabouts are supposed to prevent accidents, but it's also like, oh, didn't see it. Like there's no, it's not, it's a little harder to get bad drivers out of roundabouts.
A few years ago, they had the roundabout convention here in Green Bay. This is true.
They had a convention for roundabouts.
This city had more roundabouts.
How many nerds were at that convention?
Well, just besides myself.
I knew you were going to say that.
But they had the convention here, and because they have more roundabouts here per capita than almost any other city in the country.
Really?
My only fear was they'd have a parade.
See, that I would love to see. It'd be like just the scene in Vacation.
Circles and circles. Like, yeah, just going around.
So let's, all right, we've got a few more minutes here, Bob. I don't know if I want to do LBJ or Nixon.
Let's do Nixon.
Let's do Nixon. But real quick, before we get to Nixon, the reason I was interested in LBJ, as you said, did he cooperate with the Pearl Street Mafia to kill Kennedy? That is one of the theories I've heard. I don't know how outlandish it is or what, but come on.
That's one of the more outlandish ones, yes.
I just
that's
can't
one of the ones that they talk about. And I've read about that quite a bit, and I don't believe that he was involved in that.
I don't either.
He had such an inferiority complex about the Kennedys that it was easy to feed into that.
Right. Great point. Okay, so let's finish with Nixon.
Okay.
His gambling debts. I didn't know this. Please tell us about Nixon's gambling debts.
Okay, Nixon loved to gamble. And during World War II, it was a known fact, he was like a supply officer in charge of the supply dump, the depots. And the people would come and they would gamble with him. And he was very good at it. And when he went through his political career, when he went into Congress and then went into the Senate and then became vice president, he could travel a lot and he would go to Cuba because it was open. It was run by Fulgencio Bautista at the time. And they had everything. They had the casinos, which he loved. And he went there. Well, he was $50,000 down at the time. And he didn't know what he was going to do. So his good friend, B.B. Rebozo, was actually...
Great name.
Actually backed him up and gave him 50 grand, said, don't worry about it. And BB was the guy who was connected to all the mafia all over. He's the guy that made the arrangements in Cuba and bailed him out. So
Jeez. What was his game? What was Nixon's? Did he have a card game of choice, or was he a slots guy?
No. He did cards. Everything he did was cards.
Yeah.
Yeah. It was like, poker and 21 and anything like that. But the gaming kind of thing, the games, no. Okay. His big thing was he loved poker.
That makes sense. That I think it's easier to get addicted to a game like that rather than just playing penny slots.
All right, so that $50,000, which was in 1955, and today's dollars is $591,021. That's a
pocket, walking around money,
pocket of change. So anyways, he took money from everybody. Like I had said earlier, he took distributions of $500,000 from Jimmy Hoffa so that he could get out of prison. And then Tony Provenzano, mafia guy, on behalf of the unions, gave Nixon $500,000 to stop Hoffa from doing any union activities, from prohibiting him from doing anything in the future. And then not too long after that, Jimmy disappeared.
He might have disappeared with 500 G's in his pocket. Is that what you're saying?
No, that would have gone to Nixon.
That would have gone to Nixon. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. Jimmy would have been,
ouch. He got the money first, though, before.
Yeah, no checks.
But Nixon didn't have anything to do with.
Right. Murray Chotiner, the guy who was his campaign manager, handled all the cash.
Okay.
So
how do you know all this stuff?
I read Google? A lot. I Google, okay. I read. You got to dig deep. You got to really be willing to make the commitment. Wait until someday we get together and we talk about the Bush family.
Oh, yeah. We didn't hit the Bushes or the Clintons here.
Yeah.
The mob.
Yeah.
All right. Part two, right?
Next time.
We'll make it a miniseries. All right.
We got one text right on the board. Yeah.
Who is that? Where
Tony
is
the trucker said, Pete, roundabouts are the stupidest things invented.
He's a trucker, too. An 18-wheeler in a roundabout. Yeah. Tony, I think you're exempt. I don't know, man. Thank you for that. Thanks for getting in under the wire, Tony. Thank you, Bob, for being here.
Thank Always you for fun. Having me in.
The lovely and talented Bob Dennis, the lovely and talented Wayne York, the lovely and talented Conrad.
Put your clothes on.
Put your pants on, Conrad.
All right. I guess I will.
That glass goes down too far. Thank you to all my guests, all your texts. Always fun here at Nightlight. We'll be back tomorrow night to do it all over again. On behalf of the lovable producer, Conrad, good night, Wisconsin.
The national news cycle never stops, but it can be hard to find news about your local community. Civic Media is dedicated to providing quality local and state news coverage across Wisconsin. With the Civic Media app, you can get notifications about local stories that matter to you and your community. Find the free Civic Media app in your phone's app store and choose notifications from the menu to tell us what kind of news you want to hear about.